So how are you?
Are we starting?
Yeah, we're starting.
Oh, okay. All right, good. Do I have furnace face still from hockey?
No, okay. More than anything. Not anything unreasonable.
Okay.
I'd let you know. You think I would? You think I wouldn't let you know?
Good.
Furnace face?
Told you, but tell you again. So my kid was playing in Sarnia the other day, and Deli, who was on our podcast. So Andy Delmore was on our podcast, and he was getting inducted to the Sarnia Stang Hall of Fame. And so it was good to see him, all that stuff. Good for him. And I met a guy I used to play with in Sarnia whose son plays for Sarnia and the other son plays for London. So John Sim. So John plays in with Dallas Islanders, somewhere else, then in Europe, and he scouts right now. So I was talking to Deli, and he introduced me to John. And, you know, hey, how you doing? And as I was talking to Deli, he goes, hey, do you have a podcast? I said, yeah, I do. He goes, I see your face, but your voice, I recognize your voice. He goes, yeah, I listen to it all the time.
That's awesome.
So he goes, I'd love to be on it. So I think I've got it booked for next Thursday. So he's going to come on, and that'll be good, because here's a guy that, not overly big, like we're basically eyeball to eyeball, and, very skilled, but really gritty. So, like, you see the transition to the National. So,
sorry, when would he have played? Like, what years?
Well, he would have been, he would have been like after me. So, he would have been in the 90s.
In the NHL, yeah. in the 90s?
Yeah. 90s, early 2000s. Played with Otter. So, I said, oh, yeah, I know Otter, and Jano played with him a little bit in the American League and stuff. So, it'll be interesting. And now he scouts in the NHL. So, he wants to come on, and he was just talking about a lot of the things that we talk about. And
who's he scout for?
St. Louis.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you already say that? Sorry.
No, I didn't. Okay. I was going to keep it out, but it's fine.
Yeah.
And so he scouts the East Coast, like the Quebec League and stuff. And then he does some stuff with, I think, with Halifax Mooseheads, maybe, development. So it'll be interesting, because they're going to be able to get, like, scouting perspectives. And he talked about, you know, basically the stuff we talk about. You know, my friends that are in this game, we always talk about the same thing. Like, we don't have debates, like, don't look on here and say I disagree, because hockey's politics. It's actually facts to tell you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this is good, because I think people should hear that, right? Yeah. To hear the truth from another professional, and then just talk about his grind, and you know, his boys play with like some grit and jam, and you know what? Sum it up. I can sum up the podcast, not really, but I could sum up again. He goes, hard to find guys that just want a battle. Because they're just so hard to find.
Yeah, you know what I like about that too is a few podcasts ago we were talking about it, this thing, and you brought up like Denny Savard, like when he came into the league, how he was super slick and skilled, and that was the
so
wow.
That was like the late 80s Montreal or Chicago Blackhawks.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was still like a threat of toughness through the game beyond like through the 90s in the 2000s. And then I think within the last maybe decade has been like, for me personally, maybe it was before that and I was just too young to pay attention, but it started to change. Maybe it was because some of the rules changed and that kind of thing a little bit. They started cracking down on like the hits and all this kind of stuff too. But now the rare thing is the gritty guy. And I liked how you said it last time, was we're not just saying it's the gritty guy because we like the gritty guy. It's just that is what's lacking in the game today. It's if it was the skill guy, we would say just as well, like, people don't know how to handle the puck anymore, and everyone's running around trying to be an idiot. Yeah.
Philadelphia Flyers, 97. I was listening to, actually, I can't remember who it was, someone talking. I was listening to an interview of someone talking about when they played, or the question was, when was the most hockey at the worst of the NHL? And he said, definitely in the expansion. It made sense. You had all these guys coming in. You had guys leaving for the WHL or the WHA. Like in that time period, and that's when the Philadelphia Flyers came in, and you had, you know, just the grind stuff. So it changed the game a lot there. Don't know what my point was, so that's all I got to say. But like, but to your point, so like we're talking the other day, and it's been brought up quite a few times because it's news. So the other night when the Greg guy from Ottawa had an empty net, slap shot in the net, and O'Reilly ran him like, what do you think, Andy? I go, well, it's just, that was like a code before. And it still is. It still is, obviously. But it's like, now it's like so newsworthy that someone got offended or got pissed off that you kind of broke a code. right? And like, so like go back to the 80s, 90s when I played, if you even, if you were doing that, and it's like, people could say, well, you can shoot whatever you want. Yeah, yeah, 100%. But I know if I did that in 1987,
bench
brawl. I would wind up, I would shoot, and then I would expect five guys to beat the living snot out of me, because it was just, you're showing them up or whatever. And it's just, I'm not, yeah, I'm saying it's right or wrong, but it's, for me, it's like all those things that people do and they don't back themselves up. Like, you can't embarrass other people without expecting a punch in the face. That's it. That, like, it is what it is. It's the sport, right? Like, there's a piece of respect. And I'm not, the Ridley Greg guy, I'm like, whatever, he comes from a different era, so maybe he was like, what? I just shot the puck in the net. But there's a code that when you disrespect another player, competitors,
there's a consequence. Yep.
And
that's why I don't
right
mind
or wrong. You know what I mean? Or wrong, it is what it is. And like, I think if you're not aware of that, then maybe you should be. Because all it takes is, you could, let's say like you eliminate fighting, you eliminate, you know, everybody's really the choir boys now, right? Altar boys or something like that. And we play hockey, and it's, you know, well, if someone likes to celebrate when they score and go to your bench and give you this, you know, the ha ha ha, we buried it, all that stuff. And if you think that that's okay, that's fine. And if you say out of the 800 players in the NHL, most guys are fine with that. All it takes is one. So I think you just need to be ready. It's just like no different than a player in real time playing a game. If you make a pass and you're watching it and your stick's down and you're not ready and someone clobbers you like 2 seconds later, it's you got to kind of expect it, right? You know what I mean? So it's always like maybe make the play and have your stick up and always be aware. So I don't know if that connects the two, but
well, I just like the reason I like it, that part of it, is because it's the equalizer, or it can be an equalizer. Otherwise, if it's just pure skill, then the most skilled guy who maybe didn't even necessarily earn the skill, like maybe some kids are just really gifted or they're whatever, have some kind of advantage that other kids don't have or other players don't have, you can make up for that with the toughness part, which is why I like it, because there's different elements. It's not just a one thing where the best stick handler wins or the best skater wins. That's what makes it more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's,
so the mix of everything is the best.
Yeah. You can debate the, you know, each individual situation, like whether you agree with what Riley did or not. It's like, you can debate that individual thing, but the fact of the grittiness, the toughness overall, why it's valuable to me at least, is because it can act like an equalizer in the game. You know what I mean? So that's cool. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the PowerTech Online Membership Program. If you've been listening to Andy and I wondering, hey, how are they able to get all this podcast content out there? Well, that's because of our members. For just $9.99 a month, you can get access to our online video library, including hundreds of videos of Coach Andy teaching, and have the option for consultation calls with Andy or myself to go over anything you need. We can cover training, nutrition, coaching, parenting, agents, the junior college hockey path, whatever's of interest to you. You'll also be able to participate in our popular Ask Me Anything episodes, have access to special discount codes, and be given priority for any PowerTech in-person camps or events. If you like what we're doing here and you want to support us, this is the best way to do it. Visit powertechhockey.ca/memberships or find the link in the description of this video to learn more. I want to talk about more or less like how coaches think about different things today. So we've had a couple things come up over the last week or so that I can see it's difficult for parents and players to understand maybe what the coach's thought process is. And oftentimes it comes down to the same thing where you're on a team, it's not just about you. So not all these things are going to be directly about that, but it's just maybe giving some insight to how coaches think about different issues. So I had a few things I wanted to talk about with that kind of thread through it, so people can kind of see where the coach's mindset might be at. Yeah.
So maybe setting the table for you, if that's a thing, is there's been some questions, there's been some threads on our social media sites, and then to boot, you've been coaching a team now this year, and now things that were maybe you never thought of or you thought were easy answers are a little bit more complex because now you're behind the bench, right? True that.
So first one, I think this will be like a shorter piece of it, which I wanted to talk about because I've had a few questions about this. at the youth levels and older, is coaches swearing at players, around players, near players, and just language in general. Normally the comment or the question or the concern I get from the person asking or saying it would be the coach screams and swears at them. Like the, on the negative side of it, there's not really a positive side of it that I get much. So it's either like people don't acknowledge that how the coach is speaking, like they don't care that the coach swears, so they don't say anything about it, or they are saying like something negative, like it's a negative thing. Yeah. So I'll throw it to you first, and then I'll throw my two cents in. Like, what do you think about, let's say, swearing in general as the coach, or more colorful language, or however you want to take it?
Yeah. So before I answer the question, I'm going to go and do a little loop here. And I'll say this. Amazing to me, or it's not, that what we tolerate in hockey as a parent is not what we tolerate in life.
Oh, yeah, I see where you're
so
going. Yeah.
If your teacher, I'm just painting a picture here. If your teacher was at school and every time they got frustrated or they wanted to describe something, they used a cuss word. I don't use that word, by the way. I actually, just to qualify, I swear a lot. Yeah. Like a lot. For some reason, I'm able to clean it up here and pick my spots. But so if your teacher was doing that in class, there'd be a lineup of people complaining that would go to the board because that's inappropriate there. In the hockey rink, it seems to be a little bit more appropriate. And I'm not defending or whatever. It's just that seems to be a thing. Now, there's going to be some people that say, no, never. Some people that says, I don't care. Should swear at the kids. And maybe my teacher should swear. And I don't disagree necessarily. Yeah. But that's the first thing I would say about that is that what we tolerate or what we tolerate is typically less in some instances at the hockey rink than we do at at school and stuff. So now the swearing itself. So I don't know if I'm answering this directly, but it's more to make you think. Because this is like I say, to me, coaching is parenting. I'm going to parent a coach right now and say, should I swear in front of the kids? Like, I mean, once you get to a certain age, junior level, it's obviously a little bit more appropriate. But what would you, do you feel better? How do I say this? Is it something that if it bit you in the ass, like that's what you got to look at is if you do things, if it bites you in the ass, are you going to regret it? Is it just as easy not to say? Or is it, no, how am I saying this? Can you avoid doing it? Like, is there repercussions for it? So like, I don't know if that's clear, but like if you go on a tirade and you got 10-year-olds and you go on a F-bomb tirade, just not at them, just you guys, blah, blah, blah. You need to work your blank, blank asses off. Like ass for some people is a swear, by the way. But and whatever, you go on that. Could it be said a different way? Could that come back and bite you? And if a parent came back or a couple parents or the board or whatever and said, we don't like the language, it's inappropriate. Are you good with that? And if you are, then that's who you are, right? And again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Like, so being a dad, I never really hid the way I speak with my kid around. So is that good or bad? I don't know. Some people would just say, wow, that's awful. You use the F word in front of your kid. And like, so my philosophy is, you know, he's going to hear it anyway. So I'm not really, whatever. But the other thing you got to look at is when the kid looks at you, the kids, do they look at you as, wow, he swears a lot? And maybe that's what all they hear. So does it do more harm than good is the question. Does it do more harm than good? And I would say, I'm not a choir boy, but I would say that if you could find other words to be colorful, if you had to, it would probably err on the side of being better than going on an F-bomb, because all it takes is one, right? Because like and it's not because of social media and it because there's cameras everywhere and stuff, but all it takes is one complaint, right? And one complaint can put you in a bad spot or make you realize, oh man, I was like inappropriate, or you say, screw you, screw you, screw you. You guys are like little wussies, you know, so whatever. So I just think, would you do it if you knew that there was a couple people that were very offended by it?
Yeah.
So, and that's not to say that you're still not going to do it, but maybe you're just more aware of it. So maybe instead of swearing 20 times in a game, it might be the one time, better than zero. But, and I'm not advocating, I'm not telling anybody don't ever swear. Like it's your choice. But like with, as we said about the slap shot on the empty net, there's consequences for every action, right? So if you are an adult coaching kids and you have very colorful language and the consequences are five people talking bad about you or wanting you fired or don't, and you're dealing with that issue all the time, then was it worth it?
Yeah.
That would be my question. There will be consequences. And again, I've coached and I've used language that, you know, when I look back or still do today, I go, you know, maybe I've cleaned up a lot,
yeah,
but maybe you didn't need to go there,
yeah,
because I don't know. Like sometimes you can use it because you just have nothing else to say. Although you could pass me the pen or you could pass me the pen and there's a different tone to it. So sometimes the tone changes it, but yeah. So should you swear or not? I mean, obviously if you have a choice and respect for everybody, you're going to be in better books with everybody if it's not there, as opposed to being sounding like a sailor.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
So I think I kind of do the same thing. Like my two questions I ask myself, cause I swear too, but I'm in no way a trash mouth. Like I'll sprinkle it in. You guys hear how I talk on the pod. That's how I talk in regular life. The odd F-bomb comes in here and there, but I basically talk the same way I talk on the podcast. Speak the way I speak. Yeah, speak. So my two questions that I ask are, who's my audience? Number one. And then what is my intention when I'm speaking? So if I'm super intense, as soon as you start adding cuss words or swear words or whatever onto what you're saying, to your point, that can change the delivery of the message. So depending on the age, depending on the team, depending on the parent group, depending on the environment that you're in, that will trigger certain responses. And if it's not going to be the response that you want, then you should probably make an adjustment. So for example, when I'm with our U18 team, I more or less talk however I want. And if something's really pissing me off and I get more colorful, I don't think twice about it. I'll say it however I want to say it. And they're old enough where they talk like that anyways already. So it's nothing new. It's nothing shocking. It's nothing surprising to them. And if they told their parents about it, like I'm not hiding it from the parents either. It's like, what, you guys, your kids speak like this too, just in case you didn't know. I found myself last night, for example, on the flip side, I had a group of, I think there were 13, 14 girls on the treadmill before we went on the ice. And so what is that? That's 9 and 10 years old. So their parents are sitting here, the kids are on the treadmill, and I'm trying to correct something with their skating and they weren't getting it. So at one point I said, I'm going to be a pain in your ass about it. And as soon as I said ass, right away, I felt the ooh situation, right? Like, because I could tell by the reaction of the girls, like that was shocking. Like that was like, yeah. I said, yeah, that I said this, yeah, that I said ass.
Yeah, so I said earlier, ass, right? Could be offensive.
And I thought nothing of it. Like the parents were sitting here and the parents didn't really care either. But to me, I was just like, okay, now for the next 7 minutes, the girls are just going to be thinking that I swore.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know? If you say being a pain in the butt, no one, you're, I know it's nothing, but
yeah,
it's something.
Yeah.
If you say pain in the butt instead, or pain in the arse, pain,
right,
in the rear end,
exactly,
pain in the neck.
Yeah. So, but I could feel it in myself.
Yeah.
I could feel it in myself as soon as I said it, the difference in my audience. So to your point and to what I was saying, those are the two questions. Like who's my audience and what is my intention when I'm saying this? The part where I don't think it's really ever appropriate is if you're like beating someone down with it, you know? So if even with my U18 guys, I would never use those kinds of words to make my message more harsh personally at someone. And I think that's where the more problem could be, in my opinion, as the coach, is when you're doing it to like berate someone or beat them down or to an individual saying it, because there still is the child-adult relationship, even when they're 18, you know, 17, 16, 15, when they're old enough where they're still super impressionable, they're still learning and developing, and that's something that can leave an impact. So it's not the same as if you're at work with another adult and you guys get into a yelling match or whatever. It's just not the same dynamic. So you always have to be aware of that to some degree. And I think that's where it gets into the territory where I don't think it's ever really appropriate.
Yeah. So to that point, like, as I'm thinking about this, you know, we're just talking here, but I know for a fact that there's going to be people saying you should never, ever do that. So just by knowing that's going to happen, just as we talk, as we spoke about this, guaranteed we've offended somebody.
Yeah, someone's,
by saying,
yeah,
it.
Someone's, yeah, butthurt
so
about it.
So that's the answer. Like, if you don't care about ever offending anyone, and you don't care about that side of it, then if that's what you want to do, then that's you. And if you do care, and you know that one person be offended, you can say, well, they need to toughen up, and maybe so. It's still like you have to deal with the one person or the two, or maybe it's 80%. Like, I don't know. So like, back to the point is like, you do you, but understanding that there's consequences for everything you do. And if you choose to have, you know, swear a lot, then you're gonna have to deal with it. Right. That's, and that's the bottom line
yeah.
to me.
I think I'll just give like last thing on this for me, like my philosophy on it is exactly what I said. And then on the other side, for the people that think no swearing ever, why would you speak like this? To me, this is just me personally. I'm like, okay, that's not real life now. So if
yeah,
that's
a lot of, some people live in
and that's
in
that's
fantasy.
Cool. And that's cool. They yeah. can do, and maybe I'm not the person for them then, right? I'm not the person for them because I'm not gonna self-censor it so much that I'm just thinking about it all day. Like, if I have a slip up here and there, I'm just a person, man. I'm going to make a mistake. If you don't like that, then maybe I'm just not the person for you. Most people are obviously not that extreme. They're pretty reasonable about things like that. But, you know, there's another thing too. We got a message from somebody who said he wants his kid to listen to the podcast, but they block podcasts that have explicit rating, which ours, I put it on ours because we swear. And so he said, well, could you guys like not swear? And I said, we could,
but we don't use, like, we use very minimal.
Right. Yeah. But for this person is what this guy said. Yeah. He was like, you guys don't swear enough where I wouldn't want my kid to listen, but you have it as explicit, so he can't access it. It's like, well, that's more, we could change how we speak, but this is how we speak. And this is how I want it to be, where it feels like we're just having a normal conversation. So maybe that's on you to maybe adjust where you draw the line. You know, and maybe your kid has to figure out how to filter some of that on his own. Maybe not, but maybe, you know. So I think that's kind of where I draw the lines for me personally, and how the communication style is. But for most people that, you know, they say the coach was like yelling and swearing at the kids. It's like, what do you mean at them? Was he just fired up and he threw a couple swear words in there and you don't like that and it was shocking? Or was he saying it to someone, at someone, with the intention of being harmful or whatever? So that's kind of my both sides of that issue, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's like you reward or you discipline the action, not the person. Well, I don't know if that's the right way to say it. But if you tell someone that was not a very smart decision you made on the ice, it's better than saying you're a dummy for doing that. Like, that now you're attacking a person. So yeah. It's like kind of the same. Yeah, this is like a no-win for some people. But anyways, the question was, should you know, what do you think about swearing? It's like, some people will, some people won't. If you're offended by it, then a lot of people do it, so whatever. But if there's consequences to it, so if you like to swear and you don't care and all that stuff, then fine. If you walk through life and you just don't give a shit about anything, then it doesn't matter. But like, you can take it like swearing is, it's an expression, right? So you can also look at, and this is where, like, some people can actually get a message across so eloquently well. I'm not saying eloquently, but they could just get the message across without ever using any profanity. That's the word I was looking for, right? Ever. And it's like, it's so clear and concise, and it's, that would be the best way to go, like, to me. I know I'm not really the best at it. So like when I get animated, it's, but that's, maybe it's a flaw in me, right? Yeah. And I'm willing to say that. The next thing would be, it's an expression. So is throwing a water bottle, or the kids are in practice and they're not doing what you want, or they're not doing it to the ability that they can, and they're truly frustrated for them. And you take a puck and you just rip one down the ice and you make a little bit of a scene, as coaches do. Is that appropriate or not? Like, you could keep going, right? So it's like the end of my sentence.
No, it's good.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's a lot of ways to go. Swearing is one way of expressing it.
Jocko's really good at that. He doesn't swear at all on his podcast, but I know he swears in his own life, because he has, like, sometimes little side videos he makes where they'll slip out, which is interesting. But it all comes down to intention on it for me. I want to go to the next kind of popular one that's been coming up the last couple of weeks, is about coaches benching kids. And this, I did this on purpose. So, like, for people that listen to the whole episodes, this won't really apply. But if you just listen to the clips, I put things up purposely ambiguously when we do clips, because I make it ambiguous, like what our position is. Yes. So I'll sometimes I put a clip up where you'll say one thing and then 30 seconds later you said the other thing, but that's not in the clip or whatever. So I do things on purpose because, one, it's kind of fun, and two, I like seeing what the response is when people have to pick a side of the argument, you know? So we did the one about benching kids, and basically you were just talking about a game you watched, and you said this guy was shortening the bench and he didn't really need to shorten the bench, and that was kind of the end of the clip. So it's not you're not saying never bench kids, and you're not saying you should always shorten the bench. So on the clip, that was my little message on the clip, was just like, should AA, AAA coaches shorten the bench? That was the question. And right away, it's like everyone just dives into their side of the argument, you know? And most reasonable people, we should be on the same page of, like, sometimes you can shorten the bench, sometimes you can't. Depends on the situation, who's involved, what's going on. It's not just yes or no. And I don't know why everyone loves a yes or no answer, but I know when you get into this, you're going to explain the exact both sides thing, like we always do, because it is both sides. It depends on what's happening, right?
Yeah, there's several reasons why you could and should, and there's several reasons why you couldn't or shouldn't.
Yeah.
To use your word, ambiguous.
Ambiguous.
If I know what it means.
Yeah.
I do, actually.
I know.
Ambiguous Pat. You remember her?
Ambiguous
him,
who?
Her. Her. Him. Saturday Night Live used to do Pat, and Pat had hair like you, like down, long enough.
Or you couldn't tell. You couldn't tell if it was a boy or a girl?
Long enough that it could be a girl, and short enough that it could be a boy or a girl. And dressed with a plaid shirt and jeans pulled up, and it's like with a body that was like right in the middle. Yeah. Like, could be a boy or a girl. Had like
a little chest, but not really.
Yeah, a little chest. And you know, could they be wearing a bra or not? Yeah. So it's like, and the person's name was Pat.
Is ambiguous Pat? That's...
So the skit was always like, so would you like go to the bathroom? And it was like the ladies, the men, like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah. So you could never figure it out.
You can never tell. But everyone was always like,
That's unbelievable.
So why am I talking about that?
That's funny. Oh, you said ambiguous about benching kids.
About benching kids. So... Now it's like Pat's everywhere.
Yeah. So
so benching kids, like it's actually kind of a strong word, but we'll use it for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's reasons why you should and could. Okay. So like, if you're playing for a team that doesn't have tryouts and it's house league, or like it's a lower level, not being insulting, but a lower level where kids are there and have fun, and it's not called competitive hockey, then there's almost, no, I shouldn't say there's no reason, but understand the environment. It's a fun place to play. They're playing to keep themselves in sports. does a coach at that level still should instill discipline and life skills if they can? 100%. So if a kid on that team does something that doesn't make a lot of sense or that is harmful to other people or really bad attitudes and stuff like that, 100%, like, there should be some sort of discipline. If not, then like, that's not, sports is good for that stuff. If you're in a championship game at a house league level and in their U6, like, does winning, if you knew you could skip over a couple guys and put your best guy on and you win the championship, is that the right thing to do? I'm not saying yes or no because I'm being ambiguous again. But for me, it's you get to play. It's your turn. At that level. Even though there's competitive people at that level. But that's the level you're playing. I think once you get to a level that is more competitive and winning is part of the equation, there are times where you should and could, for different reasons, times in the game, not all the time, where you just need to win a game. And it might be a minute or two here, or a power play here, a penalty kill here, or a shift here, a face off, like, within reason. Yep. Right? And then, because you can always offset that with games where, so if you're like the best guy on my team and you're the center and I'm a center, and you happen to get two or three extra shifts in a youth hockey game, and it's the competitive league, and you know I'm still getting my ice to a certain degree, like you're just better than me, and we win. Like, youth has a hard time understanding this, though, right? But I can reward you later when we play a team that I don't need you on the ice for those two or three shifts, and I can reward this guy or this guy
kind of balance out with a more.
So I mean, it's, I think you can do that. And I don't think it's that hard. That's one thing. Then there's reasons where you have to discipline or reward based on effort, maybe. Like, effort, attitude, whatever. So discipline meaning you got three absolutely ridiculous penalties, but should it just be your turn again? Because someone else had to sit, miss a shift for you while you were in the box three times, right? So I'm not a fan of saying you get a penalty, you sit for two, too. And that's not what I'm saying. So, there's times where it's just like, and this is what I use, that equal fair comparison. It's like, to me, it's not fair if you're working your butt off and you're playing a really good game and you're doing everything right at a higher level, right? And I'm going out there and not working as hard as I can or being selfish and whatever. And it's like, I need someone that's going to show up. So, like, I mean, when the game's on the line or whatever, you get that extra. I mean, that's kind of the competitive side of things. And I think that only makes sense.
Yeah. Maybe I'll make it a little more challenging to answer, because I want it to be clear to people like how the spectrum kind of works and how you can do both depending on the situation. So let's say if you're in the NHL or you're playing pro, college, well, not even college, more just like pro, let's say.
Why college? Why not college?
Well, I'll explain in a second. So
let you finish.
Yeah. So, so if you're playing pro now, the only purpose of playing pro now is win the game. Like, development is kind of over. It's kind of like, here's the point is to win so that we sell tickets, so that we make money, because now it's a business, and let's
keep
win
my
the game.
Job.
Yeah, keep my job. So that's the one extreme. The opposite end would be, I'm four, I just started skating and I'm learning to play hockey, and everyone that goes out on the ice should just be around the puck and touching the puck, and that's 100% development. So we have, on the one end, 100% development. On the opposite end, it's now 100% win the game. Right? Livelihoods. So to get from A to B, just that, with that, those two examples alone, you have to see that there's a spectrum of it's going from zero over here to one over here. So it's going to slowly change over time. So the higher we get, the reason I didn't say college, OHL, because it is still development. Like, we're trying to send players to the next level still. When you're playing college, there's much more of we need to win. There's much more of that. It's the next closest to pro. But the goal for, let's say, the Guelph Storm is, if we send more guys to the NHL, that's much better for our organization still. So there's an interest in developing good players still. Right?
For sure there is.
So that's why I don't include like NCAA, OHL in that necessarily, or junior. But nonetheless, as you get closer to those levels, it starts to become more winning, which we've said before. The younger you are when you first start, it's 100% not about winning.
Yeah. So to keep that in context is, if you are coaching the Guelph Storm, London Knights, the Cornell Big Red, I think.
Yeah, Big Red, yeah.
Development is great, but if you would like to have a job for more than a year or two, you have to win.
Yeah.
So when someone makes a decision, and this is what I say to parents, like at the OHL level, if they have something to say about coaching, it's like, but at the end of the day, you have your opinions on whatever you want. The coach is going to put out who he feels is going to win him a game. And if he is wrong, he doesn't have a job. Or he'd be on a thinner ice or whatever. So it's like, it's not your problem now.
Right.
Right?
So at that level, it's much more about winning, but they still have the hint of development in it. Whereas if you play for the Boston Bruins, I don't care about developing you. You're supposed to come to the Boston Bruins.
If you're not good enough, you can't play.
You're supposed to come to the Boston Bruins as a finished product now. And I'm going to plug you in where you'll help our team. I don't care about making you personally better in the same way that I do for younger kids.
Yeah, and if you're on the fourth line and you get 6 minutes that night, you better have a good 6 minutes, and you better not get scored on and blah, blah, blah.
Your job is the 6 minutes. So now to get from, like I said, from the four-year-old that's just putting skates on where it's 100% not about winning to the 100% about winning, we have to get there somehow. So it's going to be changing over from development to winning. So I want to give you a couple scenarios and you can just tell me your thoughts. Let's take like a U12 AA team. Okay. So what would your thoughts be? When would you versus wouldn't you bench, shorten the bench or not at that for that type of team where we're far away from I'm 4 years old and everyone's just playing and I'm also far away from it's 100% about winning. So what is your philosophy for like that kind of team? It's not AAA. It's still competitive and they're still young, 12 years old or whatever.
Well, I mean, that's probably right in the middle, right?
Yeah, it's probably right in the middle.
Then it's AA, it's not AAA. Oh, but even so.
And the reason I ask that is because that's probably the most common demographic where I get this question. Like the coach is benching kids at U11, 12, 13. Like that's the hardest part, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. So definitely not an answer because there's definitely not one perfect answer because there's different philosophies as well. So if a coach is about all about development, whatever that means, and they roll lines, it's like that's what he does. If you have an ultra competitive coach, then he's going to want to win a little bit more. But somewhere in the middle, I think, always makes sense. And I think it's appreciated by people if they're honest, right? If they're honest. So as a coach in youth levels at, like you say, the U12, you don't have four lines, you have three. So there's a way. Somehow, some way that everyone can play. It's not everyone gets 2.5 minutes every period or three. It's not that's what it is, but everyone gets to play a fairly balanced amount, right? True. How do you do that? There's different ways. So OHL and pro, typically, the lines are kind of rolled for the most part until there's penalties and special. You know, but they're kind of rolled, and to a degree. So if you can roll your lines and be a competitive team, and everyone kind of gets to play, that's ideal. But then a penalty comes. Okay, so a penalty comes, and you're either on a power play or your penalty kill. So if you're on a power play, you could have the philosophy of the next line goes, which is fine. That way everyone gets equal, or you can have. If you're a really competitive coach or it's about winning, you can have a power play unit that gets on for power plays. And that's what they get. But so after that, you still got probably 5, 6, 7 guys left over. So if those best players are also on your penalty kill, well, then you have guys that don't get to play. And there's a spot for everybody somehow. And that's through whether you're winning or developing, I think it's important that you develop and win, and try to win at the same time. So if you have power play guys, then you probably should have, you should work on those other guys to be at least penalty killers. Not at least. Penalty kill's huge, by the way. So, and it's still pride in it because, like, it's just because you're not scoring, you could be defending and you could put pride in that. So you can offset it with that, obviously. The next issue would be, like, does it have to be fair? Like, that's what I said earlier about comp. Like, if you come to the game and you're a good player and it's just like you just expect to play, but you're not playing hard. You're not, and you're, or you're not following the system and it's hurting other people. And I've said, Eric, I need, like, the forecheck is this, and you're not back checking, and da 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 da. You know, maybe it's a thing 4 or 5 times over a course of a game or two or whatever. It's like, you know what, Eric, like, enough. Andy gets to go and take your spot. And you can, you're not going to play for a shift or two because it's discipline, right? You're not listening. So I said this with some kids the other day. They're explaining a drill, and I said, like, it's kind of like 3 things. I mean, if you don't get this. If you don't get this right now, because we've gone through it a few times. One is you're dumb. And I go, you're not dumb. You're not dumb. So it's like, one, you just don't care. So that's a problem. So that has to be addressed. This can be addressed, right? Being dumb can kind of be addressed. I maybe have to change my coaching philosophy or style to maybe help you or maybe need more time. If you don't care, that's a big issue. Like, then maybe that's where you have to learn is by missing a shift or something like that. And I forget what my third one is.
The third one was you're trying to piss me off.
Yeah. You're doing it on purpose to piss me off.
Right.
And then that's another thing. So, like, can't be many other things than that. Right. Or I can't explain it well, but anyways, going back to the discipline thing, it's like at some point, sometimes guys need to, like, the best way to get in a player's not head, but how to get them to care is to take away a little bit of ice. So there are times where you have to.
Now you feel that's still appropriate. That philosophy is still appropriate for U11, 12, 13, AA.
Yes, because when my son or daughter, when we say pick up your dish,
exactly. Yeah,
I can only say it so many times, man.
Yeah,
pick up the dish, or do your room, or whatever, whatever. Coaching is parenting. Parenting is coaching. So, it's the same thing.
So just let me put a stamp on it. So if you don't have some of this, if your philosophy is just roll no matter what, then you are not teaching them in the moments that obvious teaching points can be taught, right? So if it's just like, you took 4 stupid penalties, but my philosophy is just roll lines.
Yeah, well, you don't put your dish away?
Yeah.
Oh, well, what can I do?
Yeah, there's a missed opportunity for teaching. And as a coach, you're supposed to be teaching, right? So I think that at the end of the day is why the one side extreme of roll no matter what, in my opinion, is not an effective strategy, because now you're not doing the teaching part. You know, you're not doing the teaching part in many of the moments that will present themselves when you could teach. Even if you say, well, I'm still teaching them the systems, I'm still teaching them what I want them to be doing, yada, yada. It's like, okay, well, if they don't follow it and you just keep letting them go, then you're not doing the teaching part, you know? So I think that's where the line is drawn, even at that that U11, 12, 13. Now, where I'll say the coaches can be at fault, though, is when they don't communicate their philosophy up front. You know, so I'll give an example of that mistake that I made on the weekend. We got into our first overtime situation. I was telling you about this before, and it's 3-on-3 in overtime. So again, this is U18 now, so it's a different level, but it's 3-on-3 overtime, and I only have 3 players. What's the philosophy during overtime on 3-on-3? So in case people didn't know this, it's possession. It's, I need guys that aren't going to turn the puck over. I need guys that are going to manage the puck, and I need guys that are going to not make risky plays if they don't need to, because it's 3-on-3. So I'm picking my guys with that philosophy in mind. That's who I'm picking is going. I still want everyone to play. So I, in my head, I already know that if we play this full overtime, everyone will have gotten on the ice, because I still value that development piece where I want everyone to have been in the situation. We ended up scoring 2 minutes into the overtime. So only like 3 sets of players got to go. And I did have a couple guys go up more than once because they were going. So it wasn't like next guy up. So in my head, like, that's a pretty simple thing to understand. So I had a couple kids that didn't get on the ice in overtime. And so I had one kid come to me after the game, and he was like really upset that he didn't get on in overtime. And I'm talking to him, and I'm like, dude, like, relax. It was just nothing personal. I don't think you're no good. I like none of that. I was like, we only had 2 minutes. I had a couple guys to go. You made a couple mistakes earlier in the game that were fresh on my mind. So I picked someone else over you because at the time, that's what I was thinking. For right now, this guy was going more than you for what I thought. But it's nothing. It's not that you're never going to play in overtime or whatever. So I hadn't communicated to them, the whole team. This player coming and speaking to me pointed out the fact that I had not communicated my philosophy in overtime to these guys. So I went back in the room after I already gave my post-game speech. I was on my way out. This kid came and asked to talk to me. I went back in to explain that to all of them. Like, this is how I'm going to coach overtime. This is how I'm going to pick who goes. This is how I'm going to be making decisions in those moments, because now it's like crunch time moments of the game where we can win the game. So we're more on the side of winning matters at this age for U18s, but I'm still heavily invested in the development aspect, and I need to make sure that the kids know that, even in a situation like overtime. So that was a mistake that I made as a coach on the weekend, where I just didn't even think twice about it. I'm like, yeah, they'll get it. They'll get why this is going on. And this is U18s. This isn't U12. And still, there's certainly more than just that one player that were like, why didn't I get to play? Or why did he pick this guy first instead of me? Or
you start off with three, the 12 other ones are saying, you start off with three, the 12 other guys go, why'd they pick him? That is what it is.
Exactly. And so to a certain degree, that will always be there. But as the coach, it's on me to make sure I'm communicating my philosophy about that. So if we scale it down or up or whatever to U12, 13 or beyond what I'm talking about, that piece of it, making sure your players know how and why you're making the decisions you're making, I think is super important. That transparency piece is super important, because there's nothing worse. I remember being a player than not knowing what your coach is thinking. It can be very confusing, and it can be very discouraging, and it can be really frustrating, even if you're one of the better players that gets to play a lot, because I don't know why my coach is making these choices. And that can be really tough, even at a younger level, when maybe you're not even old enough to be paying attention as much, you know? So I think that's a huge thing. No matter what you do, at even if it is U12 AA or whatever, you have to be able to explain to your players, and at that age even more, probably to the parents, why you're going to make the decisions that you're making. And that's up to you as the coach, because it's your philosophy. You're the coach, you know? So like you said, it's not a right or wrong answer, but that's something that I value as a coach, is making sure people know what my thought process is. So we're all on the same page on what's going on.
I think it's better.
Yeah, it's definitely
especially
better.
Especially at the youth levels.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this is just the last thing on benching, but then it's not benching, whatever. I got to say something about the coaches after. The coaches that have to win at all costs, okay? So the thing is, and like we talked about this before, and when I laid it out, there's a lot of people saying, you guys are snowflakes. It's about, you know, if you can't take it, get out of the game. We're raising soft kids and stuff. And it's like, hang on, just a second. Just hang on. So what I was saying the one time is, I remember my first year in junior, where things are not communicated, especially in the 80s. So I'm in the OHL, and I was a goal scorer and put points up like crazy. So I'm in the OHL, and I no clue that a 19 and 20-year-old is supposed to be better, and they were drafted to the NHL. Like, they should get more ice. I didn't know. I thought I was good. So anyways, like, first time that I was riding the pine, sitting there going, what is going on? And if you've never been benched in your life, or if you've never been, because, you know, you're a good kid, you work hard, you do all the right things in life, you put the puck in the net, you're a good teammate, all those things. And then you do that now we're at the highest levels, and all those things don't give you ice time. And you're sitting there and you don't know why. Well, it doesn't feel good. So like when people say, kids need to toughen up, you guys are snowflakes because, you know, that's life, get used to it. Like, we're raising a bunch of wusses and all that stuff. It's like, relax, man. Relax. That's not what we're saying. What I'm saying is that if when I was in junior, a guy's in pro, when they're not getting the ice, they it hurts them, right? And we can understand. Even when you understand the concept, you can understand. But it's like when you're the guy that is not counted on, or the coach is going like, no. Okay, that guy, and skips over you every time, then it's personal, man. it is, even though it's not, but it is. It doesn't feel good. So that's someone that's making money. So what do you think a 12-year-old is doing? If you just don't communicate it, or you start just benching guys, like it rips you to the core, because like a lot of guys that play hockey, that's what they are. Like, I'm a hockey player. This is me. So if you're not getting them on the ice, it's like, but you're not a very good hockey player. That's the message.
Yeah.
You're not one of our better ones.
Sorry,
right?
To cut you off, but this was exactly what I felt when that kid come to talk to me.
Because he's a good player.
Yeah.
I know.
He's a good player and he's a great kid.
Yeah.
And so I could see how upset he was. And I was like, I'm crushing this kid right now. I was like, that is the last thing I want to do as a coach. And I did it without even thinking twice about it, right?
To our point earlier, we were talking off, like before we got on this, I was talking to you about, I was talking to Eric about, now that you've been coaching for a while, the things that were so simple to answer have so many different layers
of complexity. Yeah.
Complexity and different ways to look at it, and different people attacking you from different ways, right? So a simple thing like, yeah, I shortened the bench. It was 2 minutes left in the game, and we needed a goal, or we need a penalty kill. What? But it's that guy's parent. It's this kid to you. It's the grandparent. It's the agent. It's the owner. It's the GM. It's all these things. You're making decisions for that you feel are best.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And that's what I realized, exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's like, this kid comes and talks to me, and I'm seeing it in his eyes. Like, wow, it's like, I just crushed you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry, kid. Like, my bad. So I backpedaled hard to try to explain to everyone so that I don't do that again. That's the last thing I want to do, because the development part is still a huge component. It's not just about winning.
At that
right?
level, for sure.
It's not
for
just about winning.
Yeah.
So you say you want to talk about coach that the win on
all
costs.
So then it's like, okay, so then, you know, we've talked about this before. I think the one thing I can't understand truly is a coach in youth hockey that is already shortened of is playing to win no matter what. Now, and then we're going to get the people that say, yeah, well, life's about winning. It's like, yeah, I'm sure you're a freaking champ.
I'm sure you're winning.
I'm sure you're winning at everything in life. But let's be realistic. Of course we want to win. Yes, 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 yes. We want to win every game. We want to win every shift. We want to win every battle. But life, it's not exactly the way it works. And that's what I would say to guys. It's like, there's a development piece. Like, people pay the same amount of money. It's not to be equal, but it's about giving kids a chance. And if there's a lot of, it's good for the kids that are the best, that are counted on, like those 6-7 guys, but for the rest of the team, it's not the best. And it just doesn't make sense though. Like, if you have 15 guys, that's youth hockey or less, 15 players on your team, it's like, there are times, yes, but there's no real reason for someone to come out of a game and say, I didn't play. There's only 15 of you. Like, there's a role for everybody. So I was talking to someone today that they had a talk with their assistant coach. They had a talk with their coach, and the coach before the game said, yeah, these guys aren't going to play much today. And my friend that coaches on this team played pro, good pro. And he goes, what are you talking about? He goes, well, no, they're not playing today. I'm going to get these guys. You know, they're going to get double shift. These guys are hardly going to play. Like, that was the pregame talk. He goes, well, I'm out of here, eh? Like, that's not what we're doing. And it was like, yeah, we have to. And he goes, what are you talking about? Because you can find a place to play for them. So basically what he said, he goes, this guy was making a decision before the game was played that, Eric, you won't be good today, so you're not going to be playing. I didn't even give you a chance to fail. Didn't give you a chance to succeed. Andy will be the guy today. Like, we'll get him the ice. What if I'm having a bad day? So you didn't even let it shake out. So anyways, I don't know if I'm clear or not. That's
just
my thoughts.
That's the other side of it. That's the win at all cost guy, right? It's like, this is what, again, I outlined at the start, you got NHLers on the one end. That's the only time that win at all cost is now a thing. Anything that's not that, you still have players that are trying to get up a level. There's a development component no matter what, right? So it's important that you see that as a coach.
I would say that, you know, in probably everything other than the NHL, and maybe even here and there, not much, but I would say that there's a point in the National Hockey League that it's a money thing, that I can get someone a little bit cheaper that's, maybe this guy's maybe a tad better, but I can get him a little bit cheaper. He's 30, this guy's 22, And if I develop him this year, because we're in last place or whatever, that might work. So that's like maybe one exception. In junior college, it might be the same thing where you'll see someone come in the league and they're just not quite ready, but they're going to be good. Yeah. And what do we do? If we're not going for it this year, like if maybe it's just better to take a younger guy, put him on the fourth line and get him some reps and get him used to the league, as opposed to this guy is maybe a little bit better, but you know what? He won't be around next year. This guy will be for 4 years. That stuff does happen a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
interesting. So I guess moral of the story for me from at the youth level, even junior, because there's still development stuff. I think it's important that you have to communicate your philosophy, and there isn't a right or wrong about like benching kids. I think the easiest thing is disciplinary benching kids. Everyone gets that. But when it comes to shortening the bench in certain situations, as parents, it's important that you understand your coach's philosophy, because at the end of the day, they're going to make the decision. They're the coach, you know? So I think as long as you are clear about that, then you can decide whether or not that's a team you want to be on. But I think coaches do a poor job communicating, like to your point about this coach you were talking about, saying like before the game even starts, this is what I'm going to do today. I'm sure the parents are unaware of that. I'm sure the parents don't know that this is what's going on behind the scenes. And then they go to the game and it's like, wow, the bench is shortened already. And I'm almost positive that they're not aware of this kind of philosophy coming from the coach, right?
Yeah. Well, so I'm dabbling in a book called Ego is the Enemy. And I think that sums up a lot of the times in youth hockey or any hockey that the ego can be bigger than the game. And I think I don't want to paint everyone the same brush, because it's not even close to true, because you have some people that are coaching just because they love to coach. But then there's a lot of coaches that coach so that they're right and they're smart and they're powerful and they're going somewhere. And if you have a coach like that, and not necessarily bad, because you can learn a lot of things from anybody, but if you have a coach that, like if you're coaching right now and your desire is to win, so that, right, your goal is to win so that you can get to be an assistant coach in the junior B or junior A, and then to win and work your way up to the OHL or college, and then to win to get to another level, then your ego can get in the way, right? It's about winning, and it's not about development for kids. Yeah. So that's another thing. And some people just can't stand the fact that facing another coach that they lost, like, or they feel like a failure and stuff like that. And I get it. Like, you want to win, right? Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why. You got to remember that people all have egos, and sometimes the coach, his ego might just get in the way of everything.
Well, I said to you the other day, remember, I forget what the circumstance was that I said it, but I caught myself enjoying the power of being the coach, right? Where just because they have to listen to me, it feels good. Like, it feels nice to like have that much control over a situation where you can just say, follow what I say. So like, and I like to think of myself as pretty self-aware, and which is why I'm able to handle that well. But I had to check myself right away, and I'm like, man, if this is not the driver that you should have as the coach, you know, Eric, me talking to myself, you know. And so for a lot of people, I like to think of myself as being self-aware. A lot of coaches don't have that. So if you get caught up in the power trip and you can't check that, I can see that easily turning into a runaway train where you're just feeding your own ego about it. And this is where you get the eyes crossed, nose crossed, arms crossed guy that you always talk about that thinks they know everything. And it ends up hurting the kids, and everyone can see it anyways, even if you think you're getting away with it, kind of thing, right? So it's important that you can check that impulse you have as a human being, because I think it's just a human thing where if you get to be in charge, that feels good, you know, for a lot of people, maybe not everybody. And people that go into coaching, we probably all have a little bit of that in us where we'd like those kinds of situations. Otherwise, we wouldn't go to be a coach, you know? So I feel like that's something it's important that you keep that at the forefront so you don't get lost in the power trip, because the temptation will be there, whether it's a U10 team or a junior team,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think just spinning off of that, I think if you're coaching, I mean, like everything we talk about, we always like to, like I say that with the kids that I train, like if you want to know, I guess the biggest question that people should ask themselves is why they're doing something. and then act accordingly, right? So, you know, for me, if it, or for a coach that says, well, why are you coaching? And it's because I want to move to the highest level. Then, okay, that's how you're going to probably coach. And that's going to be an emphasis on winning. But you have to check. If you say that you're doing this because I like helping kids, I love sharing my knowledge with hockey, I like making people better, then it's like, okay, then you make your decision. You got to ask, okay, why am I making this decision? And then kind of you can check your ego that way. Yeah. You know, like if you say I want to make kids better, or I'm doing it for development, and you're sitting there and you're some guy just – you're sitting there making a decision because that kid is not helping you win. That you, I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying check it. Check it. Just check and say, what am I off my philosophy a little bit?
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. Great advice. I had one more thing, but I think it's going to open a whole other can of worms, so we'll probably save it for next week.
Long on the tooth here.
Yeah, no kidding. So that was cool. So we'll leave it there, and then we'll talk about something else next week, you know?
Yeah.
Hey.
Good, Eric.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Eric.